as we begin our practice day, just recollecting the just the value of simplifying, not complicating things, there's a discourse where it's actually a cousin of the Buddha's, Anuruddha. He's been meditating and practicing in the forest, and he has an insight, and he goes to share it with the Buddha, and saying that these particular thoughts are, you know, thoughts of a great being, say one who is accomplishing the path. And being in accord with the Buddha's teaching, and saying, you know, these thoughts of one who is in accord with the Dhamma, be one who has thoughts of few desires, of contentment, of seeking of solitude, of applying effort and energy, of mindfulness, of concentration, of wisdom. And the Buddha approves of that, and he says, but there's one more thought that is a characteristic of a great being. And the Pali word is nipapancha, say one who, and I've seen it translated as non-complication. So the thoughts of non-complication, or sometimes non-diversification, non-objectification, but I think the non-complication is a nice translation. I think the just remembering to don't complicate the practice. Don't complicate the goal. The goal is really not that complicated. And of course, we go into amazing contortions trying to get there. So that. It's that reminding ourselves of this non-complication, so that in our sitting, to to allow the mind to settle, allow the mind to shed, and one doesn't have to have a whole lot of commentary, analysis, figuring out all the nuances of every single mental state, just to be able to allow it to fall away. Just breathing in, there's an awareness and attention. And there's a shedding, a falling away of anything other than awareness and knowing. And delighting in that non-complication of seeing things clearly. And that's how the mind becomes peaceful. The mind doesn't become peaceful and steady because we attain something. It's like attaining some state of concentration, getting my samadhi. And that's a really good way to get complicated. Just that sense of getting, of gaining, of trying to force the mind to conform to some sort of a conception of what we want. There's a stock phrase that comes up over and over again in the suttas. I can't remember the Pali, but it's something like for however one conceives it, it will always be other than that. And that's a really good reminder you don't rely on the conceiving and conceptualizing and the overanalyzing. Pay attention to the relinquishing and letting go, allowing the quality of knowing to stand forth within the heart. Just that knowing clearly, and that's how when the mind settles and becomes very steady, it isn't because it's got to some state of concentration. It's because it's shed the complications of the mind, and the complications of doubt or of worry or of a self perception, allowing oneself to shed that, and of course that's the tremendous burden that we're putting down, and that's why the Buddha has us focus on dukkha, on suffering, on when we think of the central teaching of the Buddha is this teaching on the Four Noble Truths. We chanted the first discourse of the Buddha's last night, which was his introduction of the Four Noble Truths to his first five disciples. And that teaching on the Four Noble Truths is the Buddha returned to it over and over and over again in 45 years of his dispensation and teaching. It was the way that he saw would give a handle on beings who do delight in complication and proliferation, to be able to have a access to a tool that allows us to free ourselves. And that when we say, translate it as dukkha, as suffering, that's only a small part of the spectrum of, and it's hard to encompass it in any language, really. But just all the different nuances of how we create discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, and lose our anchor of well-being and clarity, to be able to shed those aspects of dukkha, And I mean, it's also interesting that although the Buddha points to dukkha and within those Four Noble Truths, the contemplation, the investigation, the relinquishing of dukkha, the understanding of its cause, it's helpful sometimes to recollect that all of the aspects of the path are things that bring about well-being. When we think of the cultivation of virtue and the aspects of right speech, right action, right livelihood, those are all things that are conducive to happiness and well-being. When we think of the development of our putting forth of sort of energizing the system, bringing mindfulness to our body-mind complex, allowing the mind to settle and the heart to become steady, those are all conducive to happiness. There's a well-being and happiness that's really beyond the ordinary happiness of gratification and excitement. There's aspects of being able to see things in their true nature, having the mind that keeps formulating its thoughts and intention in what is truly good and beneficial. It's based in happiness and well-being. So to, because sometimes we can, you know, the language sometimes throws us off. And we can get sort of the more I suffer, the more I'll be sort of justify my spiritual practice, and it's not really how the Buddha casts his teaching. The no pain, no gain perspective, but to be able to look at where we do create that dis-ease and discomfort, and recognize right there is where that's where the squeaky wheel that needs grease. It needs to be worked on right there, and then looking at the ways of being able to transform or to understand more clearly, so that it can be relinquished and shed and let go of. This is the the path that the Buddha gives to us, and so that recognizing that what he's giving us is tools, and using it as tools, as opposed to it being something to believed in. Like, I believe in the Four Noble Truths. Actually, I don't believe in. but it's something to be experienced. How do we approach it from experience? And that's the. So that's it, it's a it, 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 we can be viewing things from a a lens of categories of experience, as opposed to somehow solidifying it into a stand, sort of like a stand that's one is taking of, oh, they're suffering there, and there's the cause, and then that one, that locks one in. But when you're drawing one's experience and looking at it through the lens of this is a cause and effect relationship. It's a something that is skillful or unskillful. So then that you're looking at it and approaching it from a very different way than sort of the sense of, oh, this is me, this is self, and that's other, or that's something that is one is either trying to be or become, or trying to get rid of and push away. And it's being able to look at it from that experiential perspective and see it and say, okay, these are the causes, these are the results. There's a thinking of non-complication. There's a one of the forest teachers from Thailand, one of the very early disciples of Ajahn Mun, and he formulated he used his own formulation for the Four Noble Truths, and normally the Four Noble Truths are sort of there's suffering, there's the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, path leading to cessation of suffering. And he kind of reconfigured it, and the putting the cause first, and then the result second. And just the mind sent outside, sending outside of oneself, the mind sent outside is the cause of suffering. And the suffering is the result of the mind sent outside is suffering. The mind, seeing the mind, is the path leading to cessation of suffering. The result of the mind seeing the mind is the cessation of suffering. So it's a very simple formulation, but it's very practical, and it's definitely non-complicating. Bringing it back to that experience, which what happens when the mind moves out, when it starts extending itself outside, either seeking some sort of gratification, some kind of affirmation of self, or pushing away resistance, aversion, it loses its base, it loses its foundation, and then there is suffering. It happens immediately, and then the mind seeing the mind being willing to observe itself, not in terms of a self-obsession, or self-absorption, but a clear recognition, a clear knowing, oh, this is a mood, a thought. Because even it can be just even knowing one's own defilements. This is that's a cause for the cessation of suffering. You see, when we see something clearly, that's when we're able to let it go. And then the mind, seeing the mind, its own, also its own inner ability to be content within itself, and to being with the knowing and not seeking anything other. Mm-hmm. There's this deep, deep peace that comes from that. So to sometimes in our as we continue our practice and to sometimes challenge the mind, to sort of think, how peaceful can I become? How peaceful can I be? How much can I let go of? Let's say dwelling in that knowing of that peace and clarity. There's a certain the perverse part of our human nature that even when we're peaceful, we start looking for something else. Now what else? The way that we're, it's almost like unfamiliar territory, so we have to shoot up the signal, the flares of me. So that being able to recognize that, to see it, and then to relinquish. How peaceful can I be? Can I let that go? And that in itself is, this is in terms of the work. I mean, that's a very direct working with these noble truths. Because when we speak of suffering, isn't we all want to be free of the suffering of being miserable? But when we get caught up in something that's really overt, to start tuning into the other ways that we tend to cloud the nature of the peaceful mind, how we subvert it. So to using it as an exploration, and I think it's important to cast it in that light. Is just exploring the nuances of these four noble truths, and recognize, okay, is this what is this suffering? What is the suffering in this? What is the dis-ease within a particular experience? What is the cause? And taking responsibility for that, laying down the foundations for the a path of a practice, recognizing that we can put skillful causes in to bring about that result of a cessation of suffering. And exploring and learning and taking an interest, say, rather than just trying to apply a methodology, a technique, a set of teachings that have been passed down. One has to explore them and see how do they work for me? How do I use them? How do I use these tools that the Buddha has given us? And there, that as we investigate and cultivate this path, that exploration of these Four Noble Truths and seeing things in the light of, okay, what's the experience? What's its cause? Well, how do we, is there a cessation possible? How do we turn our attention to a cessation and ending? Because sometimes even we shrink back from endings. I mean, you notice, even just pay attention when you're in your meditation with your, just on the in-breath and the out-breath. And recognize how, you know, so often our mindfulness is okay at the beginning of a cycle, but by the time it gets to the end, it's already looking for something else to do. And just, you know, we're sort of, we've conditioned ourselves to not be attentive to the ending of the cessation. We're great on beginnings, tuning in to that cessation of an experience, and it's on the microcosm of just an in breath and an out breath to the whole range of experience, but with those the simple experience of each in-breath and each out-breath, you can start to tune in to that. What's the feeling as we allow it to cease? And that allowing it to cease in that sphere of knowing is peaceful. There's a tremendous peace when we allow things to cease and not compulsively move on to the next thing. This is a working with these Four Noble Truths as a categories of experience. How do we experience origination? How do we experience cessation? How do we experience dukkha? How do we experience the absence of dukkha? So that these are aspects of experience to take an interest in. And as we use this template of the Four Noble Truths, so you realize how applicable and universally useful it is just to have this tool. The Buddha once gave an image of the said I'm pointing to a nice large building, gabled building, said, be it. If somebody said they could build this gabled building with the second story of it without getting the first floor down, that would be an impossibility. And in the same way, said, if somebody said they could bring about the complete cessation of suffering without penetrating these four noble truths, that would be an impossibility. Making sure those foundations are there, that everything else can be built on that stable foundation. And usually, of course, we tend to want to skip over those bits and get on to the next more interesting parts. There's like at our Katina ceremony, there's a woman who comes several times a year, and she hadn't been for a few months, and she knew that we were doing a building project, and as we're building a new reception hall, and we started beginning of July. That was end of October. And she looked at what was there and said, "Is that all you've got done?" Sort of thing. And it's kind of, we've been working pretty hard for months. we put a lot of money in the ground. But it doesn't look all that snazzy. But without those really good foundations, none of the rest of the building is going to come up. Or if it does come up, it won't stay very long. The grounding our experience in these Four Noble Truths, grounding our practice in these Four Noble Truths. When I trained with Ajahn Chah, I don't know how many times I heard Ajahn Chah talk about the Four Noble Truths. It was just over a constant refrain, always coming back to these Four Noble Truths, because that's what he saw as being the fundamental, like a pivot point. You can really pivot our practice into this opportunity to really bear fruit when we get the point right. We don't veer off into extraneous things or into areas of complication, where we've complicated the practice, where we've complicated our own inner being. And so that coming back to the these Four Noble Truths. As we explore these Four Noble Truths, and when we think of suffering as an object of contemplation, it is important that we do take it as that, because that when we take, say, an experience that we label as dukkha, as suffering, then it's easy to transpose our habit of this is me, this is me dissatisfied again, this is me discontent, this is me experience dis-ease. Right from the get-go, really trying to establish that sense of this is an experience, to be understood. And this is that when the Buddha gives his teaching on the Four Noble Truths, he points out that there's an appropriate way to relate to each of the Four Noble Truths. And if we get that wrong, then that in itself can be the sort of the next cause of suffering. With the First Noble Truth, the experience of dukkha is to be understood. And in the Pali, brinya tabati, so brinya is like, you know, to have knowledge and understanding of something. And the in the Thai language, the brinya is like when you've got a degree in something, like a bachelor's degree is a brinya tree, brinya to is a master's degree, brinya ek is a doctorate, so that Ajahn Chah oftentimes used to say that we focus on worldly knowledge and worldly understanding, and we end up with our degrees. But there, it's like you get a your defilements get a degree in you start off with a bachelor's degree and you keep sort of working away until you get a master's degree in defilements, get a master's degree in suffering, and then you sort of keep on until you get that doctorate in suffering. And that's when we relate to things in the inappropriate way, unskillfully, not in accord with the Dhamma, we complicate things. So that, but the Buddha is pointing to just to have that knowledge of the experience and to be able to see it clearly. This is what it is. This is an experience of discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, or some kind of... Because it doesn't have to be unpleasant, even the pleasant shifts and changes, so there can be a dis-ease there. And the cause of suffering, the various forms of desire, are the relationship that we have with the duty, responsibility we have toward it, toward relinquishing or abandoning, letting go. So to be able to let go, to abandon, to relinquish those causes, whatever. And it's important to see the actual experience of suffering. Because when it's seen clearly, then you can see how one is relating to it, how what one's contributing to it, what one's putting into it. And that cause, that's where we can shift and change it, by relinquishing the cause. And of course, the habit or the compulsion is that we want to abandon the suffering. Whenever we experience something that is conducive to dissatisfaction, discontent, dis-ease, suffering in minor or major form, we want to abandon it. We want to relinquish it. We want to let that go. But if we haven't been patient enough and clear enough, then we don't see clearly the cause. And our attempts to let go of the effect, when the cause is still happily ensconced in our mind, then it's going to keep repeating itself. So to be able to get that relationship correct, and to be patient enough, to be clear enough, to be present with the experience, so that we can also understand and recognize clearly the cause, then we can abandon that cause, we can relinquish, we can let go of that cause. And the cessation of suffering is to be realized. The Buddhism, that is something to be attuning oneself to realize it, to make it real. And the path leading to cessation of suffering is to be developed, is to be cultivated, is to be brought into being. So that whatever effort and attention we put in terms of cultivation, it's that cultivation of those causes, factors of the past, different trainings on the path of generosity, virtue, meditation, of the virtue, concentration, wisdom. These are path factors that we cultivate and develop. And then to allow them to bear fruit, and then that the realizing is tuning into, in the same way that I was talking about when we, just in the breath, do we pay attention to the ending, the cessation? So, and we skip over it, and we'll do the same thing with in terms of in our cultivation of practice. We'll our meditation practice, or an experience in meditation, will experience some kind of maybe some settling, some peacefulness, or something pleasant in the practice. And it hasn't even really been fully formulated, and we're already, now what do I do? Planning of what else one needs to be getting out of the practice. So that to pay attention to that, realizing of the experience. Pay attention to the, because it's not that we don't experience. We tend to skip over it. And it's like the word that we translate as mindfulness. that recollecting or remembering to be present. So it's like to be mindful of what we're doing, rather than skipping over, going on to the next. Overreaching, losing our balance, losing our foundation. So these pick up these Four Noble Truths and explore them. They really are the central teaching of the Buddhas. There's a central teaching that give us an opportunity to make our practice real, to make our practice bear fruit, and because it helps to clarify our experience, say, and to not complicate our experience, and there's a beautiful image that the Buddha uses in the same way that a person going into a forest or mountain glen would see a pool of water, and it's clear, it's unsullied, limpid, and one would see the rocks, the gravel, the sand, or fish swimming about or resting. In the same way, as the mind becomes clear and one sees and recognizes these Four Noble Truths. Suffering, cause of suffering, cessation of suffering, path leading to cessation of suffering. And this is what becomes apparent within the mind as we allow it to settle and we investigate, look closely. So offer that for reflection, and then we can sit quietly for a bit longer.